Hey there. My name's Tim. Welcome to The Table, the podcast edition. The Table's a community that exists to make room to explore what we believe. What you're about to hear is an edited version of something that we call the Talky Bit. We're sharing it with the hope that it can be a positive catalyst and encouragement to you in your own explorations. In our experience, exploring what we believe can sometimes be hard work, and we don't think anybody should have to do that alone. We're able to offer this because of the generous support of donors both within and beyond a local community. If you want to contribute to keeping it going, you can find information about how to do that at thetablewinnipeg.com. Thanks for dropping by.
This is part two of the parent panel. Part one started with an obvious occasion, which was Mother's Day. And so if we were convening a parent panel from the community in general, we probably wouldn't be quite this gender exclusive. But that's how it started. It started with a bunch of people whose identity includes parenting as moms. And when I thought about part two, given how briefly we were able to be together last time, I was like, let's start where we left off. So a bit of a recap for those who maybe haven't heard the podcast or seen the live stream from the previous time together. We ended up in a space, I invited sort of this question about what does it feel like to be someone who's examining and considering and changing your own beliefs and belief structures, values, all those kinds of things around that, while also being somebody who's influencing the formation of those things in other people, in particular kids. And we ended up in a place that I'm going to summarize very broadly as feeling like there was a shared value of kindness as a bit of a landing place for everyone in terms of what we would want to convey to our kids or where we would want to intervene if we weren't being especially interventionist in the way we shape those things. Where we'd be like, now you're stepping out of that space and into a different space and we should talk about that. So all that to say, that shared value of kindness shares characteristics with other values. So I wanted to just say a couple of brief things about the nature of values because that's the terrain that I want to get into a little bit this morning. And always speak as you're comfortable because we don't have a script for this. And we are sort of sharing with whoever gets to be in on this later. So with that in mind, I think that the opportunity to have these kind of conversations in a public way is of almost immeasurable importance in making safe space for people. These are conversations that I don't think happen very often. They should, but they don't. I spoke last week a little bit about what values are, and so I want to recap this just so we have some shared language, because we're going to be talking about values. So what I said was that for our purposes, I would invite us to think about values as basic and fundamental beliefs that guide or motivate attitudes or actions. Basic and fundamental beliefs that guide or motivate attitudes or actions. So basically, they're the fuel in our action engine. They're why we do what we do. Our values are the things that we wish to bring into existence in the world. To the degree that we have some agency, that's the stuff we would like to see more of. And so we act a certain way to try to do our bit to help there be more of that. So when I'm talking about values in our conversation this morning, that's what I'm thinking of. Think of them however you wish, but I want you to know how I'm thinking of them when I use that word. And of course, in that definition, there's this inextricable link between values and beliefs, right? Values are fundamental beliefs, and beliefs are things we're attached to. That's the definition I'm using for what do you believe? Well, look at how I act. That's how I demonstrate my attachment, basically, right? So those two concepts I wanted to have guide us a little bit in our conversation this morning. And where I wanted to start was in no particular order, just as a response comes to mind, could anybody speak to how you've arrived at the values you feel like you hold at this point in your life? So the given for me is that values change, that we evolve as people, and because values and beliefs are connected, sometimes our beliefs change as well. So that's hence the present moment part of that question. So if you think about what your values are now, at this stage in your life journey, how did you choose the ones that Like, how did you say this one and not that one about the things that you value? What got you there? What keeps you there? If those feel like solid landing places, what keeps you examining those if they don't feel like solid landing places? That's several questions. I'm going to stop asking now.
Well, I didn't hear what you had to say last week. And I went through the email quickly and was like, hey, what are you talking about? And then I wrote on my hand, beliefs are fluid, values are core.
Are core.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's actually on her hand.
Yeah.
There it is. And the rest, I'm going to wing it.
can you say it again?
Beliefs are fluid and values are core.
Mm. So you're distinguishing between those two things in a way that helps you think about your values and beliefs mm-hmm. as separate from one another. Yeah. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, they're connected.
Yeah.
But like the question of how did I get here or mm-hmm. get those values, I think about what I didn't want to be mm-hmm. in regards to my life experience, my healing journey, and how I was treated. Mm-hmm. And so those values came to me through some belief systems mm-hmm. and through the journey of religion to who do I want to be to all my failures to, but there was always a core thing, and I don't know if that's innately in us
mm-hmm.
that grew from that because mm-hmm. I think when I look back at my greatest mistakes and my biggest scandals, the core of who I was like to love people or be loved and be kind. Like I remember people reflecting and saying, you're a really generous person. But then I learned over time where that came from my indigenous roots of generosity. Mm-hmm. So I think that for me it was, I knew what I didn't want to be mm-hmm. and I knew the pain of when people treated me poorly, to keep that in mind. And by no means have I not made my mistakes. But I have a better process now. And that wasn't my intention. I'm sorry about that. Mm. So, yeah.
Mm. So I want to use there's a word that comes to mind that could be understood negatively, and I don't want to use it negatively. The word is reactive or responsive. So in some degree, I feel like I hear you describing, Teresa, having core values that you have formed in response or reaction to experiences you've had that were negative. So you're like, not that, so if not that, then this. Is that a reasonable sort of paraphrase of what you're saying?
Yeah, and I would redefine reaction to response, because reaction is like when we like in a trigger hit.
So not considered.
Yeah, okay. And not considered, mm-hmm. and then response is, I could take some time, even though I want to react, but punching people in the throat probably is not appropriate right now, so I'm just going to pull myself back and respond. And so I think your response time becomes longer
mm-hmm.
as you start to build the foundation of your values and your beliefs and change that around a bit.
I really like what you said about, because that's what I relate to, is that I feel like I've always been held the same core values, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like for me, my journey through religion covered that up in many ways mm-hmm. and distorted mm-hmm. it and made it a list of rules and things that I had to do. And I was thinking about things that you said the last time we met about just the freedom you can give your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just feeling like, oh, I wish I would have had that as a child.
Mm.
And so I think about these core values of who I was, and I feel like I've had to scrape away all the stuff that religion tried to layer on to say mm-hmm. what that needed to look like. Mm. What does kindness need to look like? What does integrity mean to look like? And so that's been my process, almost like, you know, it's like a building that's been, you know, was beautiful as a child and then was painted over and painted over and painted over and painted over. And so I feel like my whole journey is just going this layer of paint, this layer of paint, this layer of paint. to get to freedom of who I actually am at the core. Again, that's always been there, but I've been taught different ways to express it that aren't true.
I'm intrigued by the core value being intact, but the learned behavior being the problem.
Yeah.
What you're describing. So anyone that, I don't want to get lost in the weeds on this, but also the context for you of that, a lot of that learned behavior was the context of religion.
Yeah.
So of particular sort of particular moral shapes or behavioral mm-hmm. shapes mm-hmm. given to a core value, right? Mm-hmm. So if the value is kindness, you need to behave it this way
yes.
in the context of this religious
yeah.
setting. Anybody want to speculate about why religion might be so determined to give particular shape to a core value that sounds pretty universal, like kindness or love? That's not a right answer or wrong answer question in my imagination. Mm-hmm. But why? Because that's a theme. Jane, it felt like your conversation really touched. I'm not calling you out on this question, but I felt like you really spoke to this already the last time we were together.
What did I say?
You talked about
it was great.
You don't remember. You talked about growing up Catholic and sort of learning in the context of religion there's a right way to be and
right.
do, and that spilled over into other areas of your life. There's a right way to be and do, and sort
yeah.
of the unraveling of that mm-hmm. and the reconsideration of that was an important part of your journey.
Yeah, so I think... I mean, if we're talking about, like, why might religion make kindness and those kinds of values rules, I think one of the things that, and this is kind of me too, the value of the community is huge, right? Like, the value of a shared oneness is very valuable to...
So you're saying in the context of religion?
Religion,
okay. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
To be one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in the Catholic Church, it's like, this is the time you do this, this is the time you eat fish, this is the time whatever,
right?
Right? But it... And it was all drawn on, like, different things that were happening in the community, right? So, like, outside of the church, too, right? This is... And I don't know, maybe the fishmongers were like, I need to get rid of my fish on Fridays. And so they like convinced the church to say, okay, Friday is only fish, right? So I don't know if that's what it is, but like...
Or maybe Jesus ate fish on a Friday.
Right, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
But it's like, it's something that, and I think it's because it's a community thing,
mm-hmm.
right? It's a community making thing. They have this shared... You know, nobody is having steak on Friday. Nobody has to feel bad, right? Everybody is eating fish. It's okay. But, like, for my, I think in my being, in the same kind of, if not that, then this. So the community is big for me. Like, I like having communities around me. But I also have this, like, core value of just the one-to-one relationship.
Hmm.
And so, like, I know lots of people, but I try really, really hard to, like, actually have relationships, which is hard because if you know lots of people and you're trying to have, like, one-to-one relationships with all of those people, it gets a little bit, like, it feels shallow, but it's not, right? Like, that's not my intent, right? It's, like, trying to, like, form this actual meaningful kind of community rather than one that's just formed around
mm-hmm.
eating fish.
Or whatever the rules
are. Or whatever
that
rule is. Yes.
Yeah.
So for my kids, I feel like that core of kindness is what I'm trying to like be like, these are the things that impact your relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
pay attention to those things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know. It's... But I think the religion thing, I think it's a oneness that you can't really, unless it's given to you by God, right? Like, you can't really impose on anybody if you're not the government. And even then, it's hard, right?
Well, and intriguingly, the it's given to us by God, therefore we should all do this, is
right.
exactly the,
yeah.
the rationale.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
In many cases.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because to say otherwise would, I think, historically sort of remove the conversation from the realm of religion and make it just generally societal. Like
yes.
It would take
mm-hmm.
away the magic part of it.
Right.
Right? of the authority part in many cases.
The authority part, not the magic part. I think the magic part still exists.
I'm not meaning magic as mystery.
Magic
as in if you don't do this, certain things happen. Or if you do this, certain things happen. So I was using it not in a positive sense.
Right.
As in magical thinking.
Yes.
Yeah.
My first thing when you were values versus beliefs, and kind of the same as what Teresa said, like values are, my first thing was they're in you. Mm-hmm. And anytime, I didn't grow up religious, so anytime I tried something that was maybe not core to my values or a way of doing something, even though it might not have been wrong, I mean, I think it might have turned out fine, but it's not fine in you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, on the surface and externally everything's fine, but it's not, something's not fine if you sort of stray from those because it's a piece of you. I don't know.
Yeah, so how does those kinds of deeply rooted things become a piece of us?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pretty big question, but is that because they can change? Sometimes they do. We have life experiences where we're like, I thought this value for me was immutable. I didn't think it was changeable, and then, you know, whatever it is happens generally, and we're like, oh, that value doesn't actually work in this context. Now what do I do? So that's what leads me to the question, how do those get in there? Because how do they come to be part of us? Because if we find ourselves in a life circumstance where we are considering a shift in one of those, that's the level, that's the depth at which we're doing that work, if we're doing it well. It's like we're extracting something that's, you know, in a sort of sci-fi
way. It's
got tentacles everywhere.
Do you hold it so tight, or how do you hold it?
Yeah. And how do you change it if you feel the need to change it, or how do you live with the dissonance if you can't or don't? Yeah. It's just in us, is how you describe it.
That was my gut thing of, like, well, for me, when I've gone against that in any, like, you feel it in all the ways.
Yeah.
And it can make you sick and you know.
I think in some ways, like, when I was growing up in religion, it talked about how, like, you're a baby and you're born into sin. And I don't believe that. I believe that there's an innate goodness in all of us. And remember when you had us do that exercise where we had to, like...
choose the things?
Yeah. Okay. And when we were reading them, and you knew most of everybody, and you said, oh yeah, that resonates, like what you're saying. So I guess where I get confused is I feel like we are all born with innate, beautiful, good values, and they just get messed up on. And so our expression gets all messed up.
So that, it's sort of like what you were describing, Shereen. Right? Like there's an arrival in the world with something. You know? So we can look at that through lots of lenses, right? I mean, we can talk about how those get to be. Well, history, evolutionary biology, the way our brains are formed, the mystery we might use spirit language for, nature and nurture, you know, community, and also how we arrive, all those kinds of pieces. So if we're trying to make safer spaces to explore what we believe, we take that as kind of a baseline. What kind of things can we behave or say, and hopefully those behave and say are consistent with one another, communicate, that helps to make room for doing that kind of work, the exploration of things like values and beliefs, the reconsideration of some of those things, even the separation of those things. Like we've talked about more than I would have guessed this morning about what it's like to separate our values from our beliefs. So beliefs are, as we've been talking about, the beliefs feel like they're more often things that are put onto us. Values are things that we arrive in the world with, or that are formed so early on that we're not conscious of their formation. That's more how I would tend to think of it. But however it happens, they're deep. And if those get challenged, but we're in deep water. That's hard work.
You have to be able to make a conscious effort to be okay with being uncomfortable. And that's something I noticed lately. I'm actively trying to teach my kids. There's no answer. It's not a problem. But it's uncomfortable. It's for, I would say, most people. And I think kids are likely better at it than adults, but maybe not so much now. I mean, there's so much. Like, I mean, something they teach in schools is like flexibility and resilience and like adaptability, and like I don't think that was ever consciously taught before.
Do you feel like you were taught, anyone in the panel, but Shereen, since you're speaking, I'll address this to you, but did anybody else feel like they were taught some things that were quite different from that? So they were taught conformity, or obedience, or submission to vertical authority, like those kind of values, like were overtly taught, if you're a good citizen, you X. And it doesn't, that X doesn't tend to get filled in with you're flexible, or, right, it's more you do what you're told.
I don't know if I was actively taught that, but a lot of it was just, this is the way it is.
Sort of structurally.
And structurally, like, for me, something I realized, like, I was, as a kid, thought of as a liar. But I know why I was lying. I was anxious, and I was doing anything I could to not be put into a situation that everybody else was seemingly fine with. So there was no threat, but I didn't feel that way. So I lied. And I am known as the kid who lied.
Right.
But I know I wasn't lying for any malice or...
Yeah, you were the kid who was trying to be safe.
When it was safe, but I didn't feel that way.
Yeah, and our perception is our reality.
So...
Back to your question, how do we do that for ourselves? Like, as I'm listening, I think about like my experience of like, you got to be kind, you have to do this, you have to do that. It came at sacrificing yourself. It was this, like, that was the whole, you got to sacrifice yourself, like Jesus sacrificed yourself and give you life, and like literally die to yourself, no matter whether it was right or wrong. So I think like some of the choices we made at Transit, then I had to lie to survive because it couldn't fit here. And so like in my journey, when I think of cultivating safe space, which is my big thing right now, it all has to come back to understanding yourself and love. Because I think one of the things that we were taught, like you're a sinner, you're not good. Like I remember the whole campaign, you know, when those movie actors like, they'd be like, are you a good person? They'd be like, yeah, I'm pretty good. No, you're not. You're a... like,
Okay.
So I think that it's a long process of unraveling those things that are, whether they're innately in you or they're learned or all those things you just talked about, but you really have to come down to understanding yourself, your own journey, and what values do you want to grow? Because there's lots. Like I was thinking about even us here, every one of us carries a different value, which makes a community, which I think is really cool. Because when we did that value exercise, it was neat to hear like Nolan's values. Because I just, as a mother, assume they will have the same values as you have. And isn't that a wonderful world?
That's all I meant to.
Then you parent even your adult children's, like, you know, and it's so you have to make space to what that person may value may not be yours. So you almost have to release that need to be right. And religion, you are right. There's no question in that. Here's the checklist, you're right, there's no more. And I know I said this to Judy a little bit first. She said one morning here, certainty leaves no room for curiosity. And so I think that's part of it, of cultivating that space for people to unravel and be curious and start asking yourself questions like, why am I sitting in this pew again? That's mm-hmm. the biggest waste of my time. Mm-hmm. So, right? Yeah. You, and be brave enough to look at some of those things that are uncomfortable. And I know from, like, now I even have things that sit on a shelf. I don't know what to do with them.
Right.
Mm. And so they sit there, and sometimes I look at them, sometimes I ignore them. But I have a core thing of, I know where I want to go, and how I want to live. That makes a difference.
Why has certainty been so important in the things that were communicated to us, especially in religious settings, if that was the context? And maybe other settings, maybe we encountered the same sort of value of certitude in, you know, irreligious or non-religious settings, where somebody was just, that's the way the world is, because that's certitude, isn't it?
Well,
because
it's easy, right? Like,
also,
it's easy to follow a rule. It's much easier to follow a rule than to like think about how else you can do something.
So let's contrast following a rule with enacting a value.
I think it's easy to follow a rule if it's in line with what you believe.
Right.
And mm-hmm. if it's in line with your values, right? But if following that rule doesn't sit right with you, it's incredibly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of this comes down to like scarcity. Right, and this whole survival thing, like we make up these rules so that our groups can survive.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? And if everybody follows these rules, there'll be enough food and we'll all survive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? We have to be kind mm-hmm. to share, mm-hmm. or else there won't be enough food, we'll be dead.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And we don't live in that world mm-hmm. like in the same way that it used to be thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
Like our threats are still there, but they're very different. I was thinking also about this, like this metaphor of the house and like being a child, and you, like, you know these things innately inside you, and how much language gets in the way of that. You know, like language is this powerful tool to help us talk about these things, but it also really gets in the way, you know, of just living that good life we have. But it gives us the tools to reconsider. So it's like this double-edged sword.
Okay, can you unpack that a little bit more? Like, go ahead and illustrate the metaphor of the kid in the house and language a little bit.
Well, yeah. Okay, so like a pre-language kid, like they're acting they don't have a language structure in their brain to help them think about their decisions. Right? Their thinking patterns are different. They're more reactionary. Right? So, you know, the other kid has a toy they want. They have to figure out how to get it. Right? They could hit the kid or they can try to share, whatever, you know. And then as they get older, they can understand, they acquire the language, they can understand the rules. We don't hit. It's not how you get a toy. And then, you know, that becomes, okay, we don't hit. That's part of being good, is I don't hit people. And as you gain more language, the rules get more complicated. Like, you know, oh, well, maybe if some kid is hitting some other kid, you need to be safe. Maybe just, like, whack them one time to say, help the other kid, right? And then these rules get more complicated, even though you know that kindness should be part of that. It complicates it, right? But it does allow us to put those nuances in there also, because life gets more complicated as you grow. Right?
I was in a public space where there were a lot of people earlier this weekend. One of them, definitely adult, no, unquestionably an adult, wearing a t-shirt that said, give violence a chance. Instead of give peace a chance. I'm like, yeah, okay. I don't feel any desire to be your friend. Which is really, you know, harsh and judgmental of me, and I understand that. But also, you know, that's that same... There's an aggressive use of language to convey a value and a slogan, you know, like that in some way. So we do learn that it's more complicated than we thought.
Well, and I think you touched on this also, this, you know, I was thinking, okay, some of these things we feel like we know, But developmentally, like, kids don't gain empathy till about age 7. Mm-hmm. There isn't empathy. And we kind of feel like as adults, like, everybody's born understanding mm-hmm. what it feels like to be somebody else. And young children aren't. And some adults don't develop that either, like, in the same neurotypical way or for whatever reason at all. And so maybe that's why we, you know, have felt like we need these rules, is to sort of gather up a bit of like, the outliers from what most people feel is like, hey, this is, we don't have people, this is a core mm-hmm. belief, but how do we keep the sociopath in line mm-hmm. that doesn't understand, oh, it hurts people when you hit them, and you should feel bad about that, and, you know, those are, that's why we codified so many things, because we all want to survive, mm-hmm. and we don't know how to reach mm-hmm. everybody.
So if we have that, I mean, I think the drive to survive mm-hmm. is, at the risk of, you know, just regurgitating a bad movie title or something, is pretty primal, mm-hmm. right? That's mm-hmm. that's core to what it means to be human, mm-hmm. and we make all sorts of things in response mm-hmm. to that. But also, in the process of that, it seems like there's often a thing that happens that's around power. Mm-hmm. Where we realize, we learn that we can manipulate other people mm-hmm. to our advantage, or to help mm-hmm. us get a little bigger share, mm-hmm. one way or the other, of the food that's scarce, of whatever mm-hmm. the commodity is that's scarce, connection, power, mm-hmm. money, whatever it is. And we structure things to our advantage, mm-hmm. right? And in some ways, when I feel like I'm listening to the conversation about the behavior of religion, that's an important aspect of that part of the conversation. Why would religion behave that way when often the articulated reason for doing what a religion does is to make the world a better place, right? To have everybody, I mean, if you grew up around religion, did you not grow up around a conversation about loving one another? You know what I mean? So there is, that's in the conversation. So in some ways it feels like maybe where it goes sideways a little bit in that kind of a societal structure, and maybe for us as parents or even in relationships outside of that, in community, is where we perceive or unconsciously start to move into wanting to take advantage of in some way, or gain a little foothold, a little step up above whether it's a competing religion or whether it's somebody else inside of our community or whatever it is. And as parents, I mean, don't want to speak for any of you, but I don't have a lot of trouble thinking of moments where as a parent where I powered up. Why do I need to do that? Because I said you need to do that is the simplest example that comes to mind, right? And so most of us can probably relate to that moment. And then someone is looking back on that moment going, that's just a really inadequate explanation for why anyone should do anything. And also maybe in the moment, it's the one I grabbed that I need one fast because traffic, kids, whatever, right? And maybe we'll come back to that, maybe we won't. And, you know, I'll make it more complex someday. So I wonder if in some ways when we think about the experiences that we've had where things have been layered onto us as rules without a conversation about values in many cases, it's just like God said it, you do it, we're good mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm. I wonder if in some ways that's a little bit akin to because I said so, and then the conversation doesn't get revisited as people grow or mature, things, you know, they're not allowed to become more complex because it will result in a loss of institutional power. So we're still got
the behavior that brings you comfort also, like, mm-hmm. because I said so, but also this is how they did it, and it was fine, so let's mm-hmm. keep doing it that way.
This is the way I know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I felt safe when we did it that way, let's not change it. Say a safety thing again, like survival.
Yeah.
I know. And I was laughing. I remember you used to say, because I'm the mom. Yeah. So my kids forever call me the mom. To this day, I'd say the mom. But I know that this will lead to a different conversation, probably for a different day. But as you talk about religion and rules, and as an Indigenous person, sitting under a colonial system, mm-hmm. all our values, everything that we are based in is a colonial system, which complicates the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Because that was the whole thing of coming over, was about control. Mm-hmm. It's our way, no other way. Mm-hmm. And it was about profit and capitalism, yes. And we're going to make you mm-hmm. have the values, be the values, to do what we want, all those things out of religion. Mm-hmm. And so it's a complicated and complex conversation, because even as non-Indigenous, because I can sit in both shoes, so I can gold hoop up or beat it down. So, so where do you want me to go? but it's true. Like when I think about my journey, I feel like where I sit and being part of the 60s group, it's a lot more complicated from my experience, and it doesn't devaluate anyone else's experience, because we all come from different places, and some places our backbones are from other colonial systems that have affected us as people and communities. But for me, it's been really a, okay, now how do I decolonize? Mm-hmm. That's the buzzword, and truth and reconciliation, all that kind of stuff. But how do we do that in regards to our values and our systems? Because I love what Jane said about like that one in one. Mm-hmm. I love one in one. Community is cool, but I like one in one. Mm-hmm. But that's important. So then structurally, how you lived in community, there were innate things like we talked about. We all have enough food to feed everyone. Mm-hmm. For sure. Like there's people holding millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. There's no reason even in Manitoba that anyone's living on the street. You think of all the empty buildings. So again, it's about value, and I think the unseen part, in my opinion, I'll add that, is the roots of that go so deep in us that you really have to sit back and okay, what values and why am I doing that? Why do I have to be the perfect mom? Why do I have to have my kids in 25 clubs? Why do I have to have a bit bigger house because now I have four kids and 3 bedrooms. Like, we really have to take a... So, when we talk about values, we're loving and kind and nurturing, and I don't know if that's because we're all moms and we, or that's like the values when we think values, love, kindness, peace, or whatever, humor. But there's also those values that are not about love, kindness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I like what Shereen said earlier. Like, where did that go different when it went against? And then where's that line where you stop listening to what's enabling you and be driven by something different? Mm-hmm. So it's a complicated conversation.
And we're always interpreting that what's in me, aren't we? Like, I feel like we are. We're always kind of going, how do I give this shape and this circumstance in a way that is internally consistent? Mm-hmm. Or if it's not internally consistent, what's going on? How can I probe that? How can I figure out what's up here and what needs to change? Because our deepest, most intuitive or innate core values aren't always right. Mm-hmm. I think that's just a fact of life, right? They may have been formed, they may have been malformed well before we had anything to say about the matter, as you just pointed out, developmentally, right? The impact of what gets formed in those first few years of life is enormous. And then, of course, we have a whole conversation about trauma that we can pour into that, right? So sometimes those things that are just feel like they're deep, deep rooted in us can turn out to be a problem. They're not always good, and that's really hard work. Right? We have to get at that stuff. That's where lots of times we benefit by skilled assistance, right? Trying to discern those things and adjust them.
I'm so glad though you brought up power, because that's what kept coming to my mind, and that would have been my experience with religion. Was it was all about and in the tradition I grew up in, it was all about male power. And that went from the people in charge of the church into the home. And I think with power comes control as well. So when you talk about parenting, it's also trying to, in many instances, it's it's easy to come from the power thing. You know, I'm the dad. And it's a different thing to bring yourself down. But when your original question was, how do we create a community that's not, and I think to me it's you take away power and mm-hmm. I'm new to the community, but I don't sense a power structure, which is why I can come.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If I did at all sense a power structure, I would not be here.
Mm. Because power categorically feels like a hazard.
And then there's no conversation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not safe at all.
Yeah.
This is a unique, like, community where you can come and explore. There's no right, there's no wrong, there's curiosity. We're going through Starbucks, and I'm friends with the Starbucks people now. And I'm like, where are you going today? I said, oh, I'm going to...
I do the same thing.
Don't say church.
I'm going to, an unchurched gathering, like it's church. No, it's not really church. She's like looking at me, and I'm like, it's called the table, and we just go kind of hang out and talk about things and values. And she's like, oh, I totally get what you're saying. I said, no.
I'm like,
it's not church. Like, you're not going to go there, no one's going to save you. Like, there's no rules, there's no, we don't even have like a building. We just gather where we can, and we just accept people and figure out what do we really believe and how do we want to walk in the world. Which is very interesting. Yeah, I was just like, because I don't want to say I go to church.
Yeah, I'm the same.
You know? And so right away I'm like, it's my unchurch gathering. Because it's Sunday morning, so people are like, well, you're going to church. Yeah. Well, no.
It's like I'm trying to, I always was saying kids' church. And I'm trying to train my kids to say kids table.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't want to go tell everybody going to kids church.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes this community a safe place, because when you don't have a most certain yes or no, it leaves it open to, because maybe for somebody, them coming, that this is their church experience.
Yeah.
What makes them feel comfort and community. And
yeah.
We do some things that are similar.
Yeah.
That's what I love and appreciate. I love coming and hearing the music. Like,
yeah.
Because it still feeds something, and when I'm not doing well, like, I'll go read a little Christian book and for a few pages and be like, oh yeah, right, okay, I'm going to go to another book. Mm-hmm. But it brings something that still brings comfort, yet safety, to say, you know what, I'm not sure I agree with what you say, but that's okay. I'm doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a, I mean, this is a life, so I'll make it really brief because it's only one way to think about it. But if you think about an X, so two continuum, you know, two axes, mm-hmm. and the vertical axes is, let's say, the vertical axes is comfort at the top and uncomfortable at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And the horizontal axis is safe on one end, say safe on the right, unsafe on the left. So you got these four quadrants, right? So in the upper right quadrant, you've got a space that is safe and comfortable, right? Mm-hmm. So that's an important space in our lives. We need that space. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to go somewhere where we know how things work and they work well and it is safe and we can just be at ease. Mm-hmm. And on the other side of that, so where we're safe but uncomfortable, right? That's where we actually learn things. Where we're unsafe and uncomfortable, that's where we don't want to be there. We want to run to safe and comfortable. Where we're safe, where we're unsafe but comfortable, so we're at ease there, but we shouldn't be, that's where we get hurt. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's a familiar abusive relationship is in that quadrant, right? I know how things work here, but it's not safe, but I'm going to stay because I know how, this is the devil I know. Mm-hmm. So that space where we are relatively safe but uncomfortable, that's the space where we actually learn. Mm-hmm. And when I think about the table trying to make a space to explore what we believe, that's the quadrant I'm imagining, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how can we enact that space where we're consciously uncomfortable because we're like, oh, I don't want to think about that, or I haven't thought about that before, or this challenges something for me, or whatever. But also, it's a place where it is safe to feel that way and have that experience in that process. Mm-hmm. So to the point earlier about our kids and learning, right, and influencing other people to be able to say, this might make you uncomfortable, and there's not something wrong with the world when you're uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. if you're uncomfortable and it's unsafe, time to relocate ideologically, physically, relationally, whatever, to deal with that in a proactive way. But relatively safe and uncomfortable, that's exactly where the action is. That's where we grow and change. So sometimes we want to provoke that. I mean, if I think about my role in the community, more or less that's the space I want to provoke every time I have a chance to do something, you know, because I value that growth and exploration, and I believe that that's a space in which it can happen, but only if the people that are there have some sense of confidence that they're safe there, right? And I think that these kinds of conversations are partly how we do that, where we talk about what our experiences are like, exploring what we believe, and even what they'd like to, what it's like to challenge a value. We have about 10 minutes left before we're going to wrap up, and so I'm going to put a bow on this, not because the conversation's done, but so that we can spend a little bit of time enjoying the music together that you talked about, Teresa. And thank all of you so much for your openness, for your contribution to this. I don't know, do we dare do one around Father's Day? Anyway, I'm not forecasting anything. Thank you, all of you. This has been delightful for me. I hope it's been a positive experience for you as well. We'll do something like it again. All right. Peace, everybody.